We welcome Scott White to the conversation. This is the Outfield Preview Part 2 here on the 1st of March on a Tuesday morning. Adam Azor, Heath Cummings, and Scott White. We got starting pitchers coming up later this week. Two-parter there as well. And a mailbag, so you can email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Well, Scott, welcome to the party. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Hopefully my voice sounds a little closer to normal this time. After
you're getting there, yeah.
Bumpy stretch, yeah. Bumpy free podcast stretch.
Now his voice sounds pretty good, Heath. Tell us about his wardrobe. You are the like the fashion police on this podcast. You call me out for hoodies.
First thing I'd like to say is you are not wearing the same hoodie that you've worn every podcast so far this baseball season.
True.
I hope that wasn't a good luck charm. Like, I hope something bad doesn't happen because you've changed sweatshirts.
Agreed. I hope not.
But the last time that Scott and I were on, I think I gave him a hard time, maybe unfairly, about wearing a jersey, a Braves Freddie Freeman jersey to work.
Mm-hmm.
That may have been unfair. Scott has doubled down, though, and he's gone with the full-on Atlanta Braves jersey today, stitching, button up, everything. It's a nice-looking jersey. I mean, the Braves have one of the best jerseys in baseball.
It's spring training. You know, games are starting. We're pumped.
At start of the Grapefruit League schedule for the Braves.
I did not know that it was customary, which I wouldn't because I'm not a homer.
Well, I mean, right. You know, there's other factors that went into the timing of this. That certainly played into the thought process. The fact that I'm not doing video today, you know, that's usually what prohibits the full use of my wardrobe is, ah, crap, I got to do a video today. But I'm not today, so that's good.
All you're missing is, like, some eye black.
Yeah.
If we put some eye black on you, you'd be set.
Well, Scott, I want to get into average draft position. We only talked about like the first 7 or 8 off the board yesterday. We focused mostly on strategy. But I would like to get just your thoughts quickly on how you're approaching outfield in both 3 outfield and 5 outfield formats and some guys that you like that you're getting at good values this year. So the floor is yours, Scott White.
Yeah. I don't worry about it too much. Now, I don't think it's as deep as it has been at times. I'm sure Heath and Al talked about this yesterday, but there is pretty distinct drop-off around the 20 to 25 range in the outfield when the Carlos Gomez, Justin Upton types are off the board. Maybe about the point you consider taking Michael Brantley, there's, you don't feel as comfortable as what follows after that, which means you're going to have a hard time getting a full outfield of players you do feel totally comfortable with, but you're going to have a hard time getting a full infield of players you feel comfortable with too. Certainly in a league where you have a corner and middle infield spot to fill, and the outfielders beyond that 20 to 25 range are still upside players. Guys like Yasiel Puig, Hunter Pence, Hanley Ramirez, Corey Dickerson. Once we've considered high end options in the past, just, we don't really know this year. And that's kind of the tip of the iceberg in terms of upside picks at outfield. That's why I don't really think it's a thin position. There's just so many players who play it across the big leagues that it's always going to be just deep with upside plays, with sleeper types. And
yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, even if you just went with an all sleeper outfield, you'd probably hit on one or two of those guys and have more to choose from on waivers after the fact. I feel like at season's end, we won't be saying, hey, outfield was really shallow this year. We'll be saying, where can I put this extra outfielder on my bench?
Yeah, so, I think it's interesting you talked about, because we talked about Brantley just a little bit yesterday. And he was a guy that I had showing up on a lot of my teams, and then I've gotten a little bit scared over the fact that he's not progressed any quicker. But when you look at average draft position, he's going after Puig, Ellsbury, and Hunter Pence, and basically at the same place as Gregory Polanco and Billy Hamilton.
Yeah.
So it seems like everybody's scared off by that injury.
That, if that's how, and I assume that's just roto rankings, right?
Right.
Yeah. Which isn't his better format. His better's head-to-head points. But if that's where he goes even to Roto, I would say that's a little too fearful of him. I would take him a couple rounds before any of those guys, even with the expectation he misses the first 6 weeks of the season, let's say.
So, Scott, who are some of your favorite outfielders to draft?
Well, thinking along the lines of upside and not provenness, Hunter Pence is one I get in virtually every league because he had just been so reliable leading up to last year, consistently a top 15 outfielder, and was that on a per-game basis last year once he got over his injury issues. So I don't think there's any fear of regression, even if he is entering an age when injuries might be more common.
You said thinking along the lines of upside. You don't really see upside with him, though. Like, you just think
well, I think
reliable.
Upside.
He's the opposite.
I think he's going to be worth a lot more than you get him for. And
okay.
That's what I mean by upside. I also like Gerardo Parra going to Colorado. I think he has the kind of skill set that could really capitalize on that environment, makes a lot of contact, has gap power that could become more in the thin air, and a pretty good base stealer too. So I could see him being a five-category threat this year, and you can get him round 15 and beyond. Randall Grichuk is one of my favorite sleepers for power this year. His ISO last year, which, you know, for those who don't know, ISO is slugging percentage minus batting average. So you're basically removing the impact of singles from slugging percentage. So you just get the extra base hits represented.
Right.
And Grichuk's was high last year. I wasn't able to pull up the number here, but well, it was high.
You want to do some quick math? Let's see how good you are. Grichuk slugged 548. His batting average was 276. So
272?
276 and a 548 slugging percentage.
272, right?
It was 272? Or his ISO was?
What do you say? That's what the math would say.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well,
that's high. That's very high.
It's very good.
I'm not sure where it ranked, but I remember when I wrote about it, it ranked high. Will Myers. I like him as a late rounder. I think kind of the
post-type sleeper.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, prior to his wrist injury last year, he had reached the point where he was started across the board in fantasy and has shown good power from the beginning, really. Just had batting average issues that go along with the wrist injuries the last couple years. So if he stays healthy, he's still young enough that he can capitalize on that potential and I think be, at either first base or outfield, somebody worth starting in mixed leagues.
He's somebody you like more in Roto?
Myers?
Yeah.
No, not necessarily. I mean, even factoring in the numbers after he returned from the wrist injury last year when he wasn't very good, he averaged more head-to-head points per game than Matt Kemp and Jason Hayward. So it's not like he doesn't work in the points format.
Well, Myers, yeah, before the wrist injury, here are the numbers for Myers. It was only 32 games, but he was batting .291 with a .340 on base percentage and a .493 slugging percentage, 5 home runs, 10 doubles, and he scored 28 runs in 32 games. He was a run-scoring machine last year.
I think he was batting leadoff.
Yes, he was. Did. He was.
Which is kind of ridiculous with his skill set.
Hey, Heath, let me ask you something. What is it about David Peralta that you don't like? Because I want to just re-explore this here. Because I was just looking at his minor league numbers. He didn't have a lot of them. But,
right.
he had decent minor league numbers, and I feel like he's not such a bad player, you know, and great second half, which I know you value. Zero.
Oh, yeah. Second half, probably the most important half of all the halves.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it's a great half.
If you're in a pennant race.
I don't think, he had a .368 BABIP last year. That's not going to happen. Are you agreed?
Oh, I probably not, yeah.
Okay, so he's probably a .280, .290 hitter.
Still really good.
Yeah, it's, I mean,
that's bringing up your batting average no matter what format you play.
I don't like him compared to where he's going to be drafted. I think people are maybe overvaluing the fact that, Ender Inciarte's gone, so he's going to play every day, and you can just take exactly what he did last year and project it over an extra 100 plate appearances?
Well, I'm not sure I've seen him drafted as more than a third outfielder, and a lot of times as a fourth. I don't know that anybody you're getting at that point is particularly safe or studly, you know?
We basically have him in the same place.
Yeah.
You've got him 195 overall. I've got him 202.
Okay.
But that's not a third or fourth outfielder. That's maybe an end of the fourth.
That's where I've been seeing him go.
Well, he's 37th overall in outfield.
What was that, Adam?
Peralta's going 37th overall in Fantasy Pros ADP.
And I've got him 48th amongst outfielders, and you've got him 50th.
Going ahead of Brandon Belt, Brett Gardner. So, you know, Belt first base, really. But Brett Gardner, Shin-Soo Chu, Curtis Granderson, Randall Grichuk, Billy Burns, Jock Peterson, Jay Bruce. See,
that, especially that those first three or four names you said, I don't think it's particularly close.
Yeah, not Chu. I didn't follow all the names. It sounded like there were some that I would take him over and some I wouldn't. But you know how it is with those positions that have more names. You get to a certain point where the names could you just they could kind of go in any order because yeah. they're all similarly valued.
All right, guys, so. Let's ADP it. Here we go. Okay. I'm going to list some names, and I want you to, we can't talk about everybody, but I want you to tell me who you want to talk about, who you want to spotlight, who's being drafted too early, who's being drafted too late. I don't think we have to really talk about the top guys, but they were Mike Trout. This is fantasypros.com, average draft position. We should get really some type of money or something from Fantasy Pros, don't you think? We've been really plugging them quite a bit.
I think we're getting really close to maybe having some enough data to have some CBS average draft.
Oh, good.
Yeah, very shortly.
Roto already looks pretty good. Head-to-head, I don't know that head-to-head will ever look good because, you know, it's going to have like a dozen pitchers in the first two rounds.
Yeah.
That's the way people draft, despite our insistence that they not draft that way. That's how they tend to draft in head-to-head points leagues.
Don't
love
do
drafting
it.
With people like that. Okay, here we go. Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, Giancarlo Stanton, Andrew McCutchen, A.J. Pollock, Jose Bautista, followed by Mookie Betts, Chris Davis. We kind of stopped there. So now we're up to the 30th pick.
I wanted to go back to Mookie real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the arguments we had yesterday with Al was, is Mookie the safe pick or is Mookie the upside pick? And he was not liking him as the safe pick, if I remember correctly. So I made the comment that not very many players do what Mookie did and turn out to not be great. So I went and looked. Before their 23rd birthday, there have been four players to post a 330 on base, a 460 slug, and steal 25 bases.
Yes.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
In the last 30 years.
And they
four
are?
Four players have done it. Hanley Ramirez.
Uh-huh.
Mike Trout.
Uh-huh.
Bryce Harper.
Uh-huh.
And Mookie Betts.
It's pretty good company.
Not to say that he is on their level.
Oh, you just said it, Heath.
Okay, he's on their level.
He might be on Kutchin's level. That's kind of where I see his upside. And, you know, McCutchen's been a league MVP, and it's been close a couple times. So,
McCutchen's a consensus first-round pick, and we're arguing over whether Betts belongs in the second or not.
I don't think it's much of an argument. I think Al's kind of on an island there, judging by what we see on Fantasy Pros.
Yeah.
And what is it he doesn't like about it? Like the batting average, like his batting average on balls hit to the opposite
his
field?
ISO on balls hit to the opposite field.
Okay.
And Al is the second lowest in the industry on Mookie Betts.
Well, I'd like to know who the lowest is.
Brad Pinkerton.
Oh, Brad. Brad. Okay, guys, let's go a little further then. We got, we've named nine outfielders. Actually, eight, because I didn't include Chris Bryant, who's listed here on Fantasy Pros. So after that, it's Starling Marte and Charlie Blackmon. And these guys are going in the third round. And then J.D. Martinez and George Springer within four or five picks of each other. Starling Marte, Charlie Blackmon, J.D. Martinez, George Springer. Who's your favorite? We know mine is Springer.
Yeah. Yeah, I say Springer.
I probably like Blackmon more than anybody else does. But Springer is...
Springer's a tier removed from that rest of that group for me. He's with Mookie Betts in the higher tier.
Right.
Because, you know, the highest combination. I think of players who will hit 30 home runs this year. I'm trying to think through, make sure I'm not overlooking anybody. Of the players who hit 30 home runs this year, George Springer will steal the most bases.
Mm.
Say?
Yes.
Probably.
And he showed last year. He improved the strikeout rate last year, and so he was able to get the batting average up to a respectable level, so it's not like he's going to hurt you there. Now, he still strikes out in an amount that holds him back a little in points leagues, but You hit that many home runs and steal that many bases, you're a stud no matter the format.
All right, I'm laying them on the table. George Springer, first round pick in 2017, at least in Roto.
I think that's a distinct possibility.
I want him on my team. I'm excited.
It's possible.
Okay. Just stay healthy, George Springer.
I mean, as far as the stolen bases go, I think he's the most likely to lead players that hit 30 home runs, if he hits 30 home runs, which I don't think is far from a guarantee. But he stole the same number of bases in 180 career games that Goldschmidt stole last year.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't. He let us down with the stolen bases as a rookie, and that's part of the reason I was touting him as a bust at this time last year, but he proved me wrong.
Well, he had a knee injury in his rookie season, didn't he?
He had a knee or hamstring or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so that probably contributed. Okay, anyway, we've got two outfielders coming off the board after that group of Marte, Blackman, Martinez, Springer. Actually, pause one second here. Not a real pause. We're still on the
fake
air.
Fake pause.
Starling Marte, you know, what do you see him as? Does he have that potential to take it to another level? Or I see him as a very consistently good player. He's had, if you just look at his batting average, on base slugging, his slash line, it's been very similar, and his fantasy points per plate appearance, three straight years. Is he going to be that, you know, top 15 outfielder again, or could Marte be something more and really have a huge season?
I think Starling Marte is more Lorenzo Cain than George Springer.
Me too. And yet, I feel like there are a lot of people willing to reach for him as more like a George Springer.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
He's probably, I think in our, this was the clearest example of the overhype. In our NL only Roto auction, which I realize isn't a widely played format, but just to give you an example, he went for $35, $1 less than AJ Pollock, who, you know, is borderline first rounder. So, yeah, that's too much love for Marte. I think Heath said it well, comparing him to Lorenzo Cain. He's more proven than Cain, but not really any better.
Okay, are you expecting, so let's say, 285, 17 home runs, 30 steals?
That sounds right? Very reasonable.
Okay.
More reasonable than I think almost anyone else is regarding Marte.
Okay, but let's not kill the guy. He's obviously a pretty good option.
Right.
Yeah. Next up, so after that group, Marte, Blackman, Martinez, Springer, we have two outfielders coming off the board, and then there's a gap of about 12 picks. Those two outfielders are Nelson Cruz and Yoenis Cespedes. Nelson Cruz and Yoenis Cespedes, they are going about 40th overall. So we're into the fourth round here for Cruz and Cespedes. Cespedes had his best season. He had an unbelievably torrid stretch with the Mets, with a 942 OPS in 57 games. But he really stunk at Citi Field. It was very strange. He hit 224 at Citi Field. So Cruz and Cespedes, do you think they're being appropriately drafted, overdrafted, underdrafted? They are the 13th and 14th outfielders off the board.
Like, I'm low on Cruz, for sure. I'm low on Cespedes as well. I think Cruz is probably being drafted a little bit more appropriately. I don't get overly excited about what Cespedes did for the 2 or 3 months he was a Met good, and I certainly am not going to hold against him what he did half the time as a Met in Citi Field. I just see him more, again, I think he's probably should be about 4 or 5 spots lower in the outfield rankings.
Okay, I will name some names. You tell me who you would take ahead of Yoenis Cespedes.
Okay.
Carlos Gomez, Carlos Gonzalez, Lorenzo Cain, Justin Upton, Adam Jones.
Cain, Jones. We haven't mentioned Ryan Braun yet.
Yeah, he'd be next.
Yeah, I'd take him over Cespedes. Upton, that's it.
You really take, that's a lot. You'd really take Lorenzo Cain over Yoenis Cespedes, huh?
I think I would.
Scott?
I wouldn't. I think there are risks to both. Like I said just a minute ago in our comparison to Marte, Cain isn't exactly proven. He hadn't shown anywhere close to the power he did last year in the previous, I think it was 4 years in the majors. And it's not like he was at an age where you'd expect a breakout. He's pretty old for a guy who just had his first All-Star caliber season. So I actually think the raw skill set is give Cespedes a better chance of repeating what he did last year than Kane. But I agree that Jones and Braun are both being undervalued here by comparison. Jones especially. I mean, he was kind of the higher end version of Hunter Pence in terms of reliability. Finally had an injury. It wasn't even as serious or cost him as much time as Pence's did last year. And suddenly nobody thinks he's that same player anymore. When he is, I mean, he's going to be the same guy he was the last 4 years, and that guy used to be a second rounder or so.
Well, hey, Scott, let me jump in on Adam Jones.
Sure.
Just a couple of differences that, and I mentioned this yesterday, but it'd be interesting just to get another perspective. A couple of differences that maybe make him less valuable. The steals are going down. Where he was never a big steals guy, but at least he was getting you around 14 a year. The last 2 years, he's given you 7 and 3. And, you know, hitting about 30 home runs, I don't know what to make of this trend, but last year that just wasn't very good. You know, we had just so many more guys hitting 35, 40 home runs, where a 30-homer pace doesn't move the needle quite as much as it did when Adam Jones was a better fantasy option.
Who that we're talking about right now do you expect to hit 30 home runs?
Well, I'm
range.
Just saying, like, Bautista, Nelson Cruz, Chris Davis, Bryce
but
Harper.
He's
Mike
not being
Trout.
Drafted with those guys.
Well, Cruz, yeah. I mean, I have Cruz ahead of Cruz.
I think Jones,
but Cruz, I mean, he's what, 35?
Right.
He's at an age where he could just fall off a cliff and leave everybody high and dry. That's not going to happen for Jones.
And Cruz was exceptionally lucky last year. He had one of the luckiest seasons of anybody.
Okay. But
for his batting
let's
average,
say
right?
Let's say he's Cruz from 2 years ago. He's still a stud. I know I'm kind of arguing both sides of Cruz here, but my point is, like, Cruz could be better than Jones, but Jones is, like, worry-free, and Cruz isn't.
Right. Okay. Well, that's fair. And Cruz, yeah, I mean, he had 304 last year or something, and he's
302.
He's usually, like, a 270.
He also had his home run to fly ball rate was, I think 30.3%, I believe the highest of the last 5 years. And he didn't really have, like, his hard hit rate was the lowest it'd been since 2011.
No.
So, I mean.
Sounds like you
really
want to avoid Nelson Cruz.
What's that?
You sounds like you want to avoid Nelson Cruz.
I'm avoiding Nelson Cruz, and that didn't work out so well last year.
Are you avoiding Cruz more than Cespedes?
I do have Cruz ahead of Cespedes.
So that's. No, you're more concerned about Cespedes.
Yeah,
I really like what we saw from Cespedes last year. If you look at the batted ball trend specifically, he was a guy who got very pull happy and fly ball happy after his rookie season, which was his best season until last year. His rookie season, he looked like, man, this guy's going to be a stud.
Right.
And then the batting average just tanked the years thereafter. It strikes me as somebody who got very home run conscious,
right?
Wanted to hit more home runs, and then last year, even before he went to the Mets, he had a much higher batting average with the Tigers. He was having a
part of that's because
he was having an Adam Jones like season. So I value them on a similar level. Just Jones obviously has the track record, Cespedes doesn't,
right? I just like the argument you made against Lorenzo Cain has just changed his profile of a hitter at age 30. I think kind of applies to Cespedes a little bit too.
Except we've seen it from Cespedes before as a rookie.
Yeah.
And then he got away from that. And okay. I don't know if, you know, he'll get away from it again with the success he had last year, but there's reason to believe he's better than the hitter we saw in his second, third, and fourth season.
Last year was his fourth season.
Okay, second and third season.
I'm going to read the names of the 6 outfielders that are going in the 5th round. I've already read them, but I'll read them again. And I want you to tell me which outfielder has the most upside and which outfielder has the most downside. And those names are Carlos Gomez, Carlos Gonzalez. Ooh, there's going to be a lot of competition for most downside here. Lorenzo Cain, Justin Upton, Adam Jones, and Ryan Braun. Cargo, Kane, Upton, Jones, and Braun. Most upside. Let's start with that.
Probably Braun. because he got back to being a base dealer when he returned last year, and really my only concerns with him are health related, coming back from back surgery. I think he has the best chance of being a top 10 outfielder.
I'm going to go with Upton. I mean, really? No one's ever talked about Justin Upton's upside before, have they? This is like a totally new thing. I just feel like...
That was sarcasm.
Yes, that was. Okay. Better ballpark, better offense. He has a chance to be a 100-run, 100-RBI guy. And he got back... Talking about getting back to stealing bases, he stole 19 of them last year.
He did, but
18 in the first half.
Yeah, he really trailed off.
He decided it wasn't worth it anymore when the Padres were out of it.
He had 17 in the first half and 18 attempts, and then after the All-Star break, 2 steals and 6 attempts. And he should bat second. That's been the word that could bat second in the Detroit lineup, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
This is a scary tier to me. you know,
yeah.
Jones is the safest one, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Upton gives you the same thing all the time. I mean, except unless he gives you the steals. But at least you know you're getting consistent power from him. Although the batting average is pretty low to the last 3 years for Justin Upton.
Like, when you say who has the lowest downside, are you assuming they all play 140 games?
No, I don't think so. Okay, so who's got the most downside now in this group? Gomez, Gonzalez, Kane, Upton, Jones, Braun.
If we're going to factor in injury risk, I think it has to be Gonzalez, doesn't it? Or Braun.
I was actually going to say Kane.
Because you're not factoring in injury risk.
No, I mean, I'm factoring in injury risk to a degree, but still, they're not going to suffer just a season-ending injury. That's not the injury risk I'm factoring in. Is
okay.
That fair? Because that just seems like a wild thing to predict, but... I think, assuming they play a relevant number of games, Kane has the chance to be the least productive if he goes back to being a single-digit home run guy. Probably still going to help in batting average. He's not a huge steals guy, but probably going to steal 20 bases.
I mean,
but that
28 stolen bases is huge these days.
The profile... Kane without power profiles is like a borderline third or fourth outfielder. I mean, kind of in Denard span territory.
Yeah. Okay. Even if he scores 100 runs. Like 100 runs, 25 stolen bases, and a 300 average is a fourth outfielder?
I mean, I guess if he scores 100 runs, it might push him into clearly third outfielder territory, but that seems like a difficult thing to predict, particularly if he's not having the same power.
All right, so moving on past this group, then it gets even more interesting. We have Jason Hayward, who's just sort of, according to average draft position, in a tier by himself, because Ryan Braun, the last of that group in the fifth round, is going 57th overall, and then 68th overall is Jason Hayward, and we don't have another outfielder off the board for another 15 picks. So there's Hayward there, but then after that you have Matt Kemp and Yasiel Puig. We can stop there and talk about those three. Hayward, Matt Kemp, Yasiel Puig going 68th, 83rd, and 84th overall in Fantasy Pros average draft position. We are now at about 24 outfielders here. Again, Hayward, Kemp, and Puig. Any thoughts, guys?
I like Puig the most just because I feel like he has the most upside.
Yep.
But Hayward's not too far behind him. And then I don't imagine I'm going to have a lot of Matt Kemp this year.
Yeah, me neither. But I do think Hayward's the one that strikes me as the most out of whack here because... I don't think he has a ton of upside at this stage. I mean, I guess he's 26 now, so, but he's just been around so long and hasn't gotten any better, and you could argue he's gotten worse in terms of being a power hitter, so I just don't expect anything more from him. And I don't think he's particularly safe either with all the ups and downs and injuries over the years. I think you're kind of buying a poor man's Lorenzo Cain and Hayward, and I don't think the price difference there is appropriate.
The next three outfielders off the board have all done it in the past at some point. Jacoby Ellsbury, Hunter Pence, and Michael Brantley. And these guys are going in the 90s. Jacoby Ellsbury, Hunter Pence, Michael Brantley, the 93rd, 94th, and 99th overall pick. And we're about 26, 27 outfielders deep now. So Ellsbury, Pence, and Brantley. I know Scott likes Pence. Brantley, with the shoulder injury, you know, we talked about it yesterday. He's not a guy who is, you know, made his career on his power, but shoulder injuries are a little dicey. What about Ellsbury, guys? You know, when healthy, still pretty good player, not that old, but gosh, can't stay healthy. What do you think about him?
When he's healthy, he's still a pretty good player. Were you not watching the same Jacoby Ellsbury I was when he got back last year?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't a Will Myers situation where it was like half a month.
He's never healthy. That's the thing. Like, even when he's playing, the guy runs into the outfield wall, and what is for some outfielders, you just shake it off and it doesn't matter. No, it's like a jammed wrist that he's going to play through for the next month. But just look what he did at the beginning of the season. He was hitting like .320. He was stealing a lot of bases. He didn't have.
He was, but it was 74 games after he returned, half a season.
Scott, if you're going to bury Jacoby Ellsbury, I think it's a little premature. He's still a good player. Just look what he did in 2014. He's not that far removed from being a really good player.
He would need an elite stolen base total. He didn't come close last year. His steals have been on the decline consistently. He was only successful in about two-thirds of his opportunities, had 21 steals in a 500 plate appearance season.
He had 39 steals in 2014.
Here's the
other thing. His batting average, he's not a reliable source of batting average anymore. He has hit above .271 once in the last four seasons.
Let's end this. Adam, how do you feel about the slash line of .220, .266, .326?
Yeah, it's not very good.
That was his second half slash line. That's the only slash line that matters.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't right last year. The year before, 2014, I know exactly what happened with him. He got hurt right at the beginning of September, and he played hurt the rest of the season. And going into September, he was batting .288 with a .348 slugging, .435 slash line. He had 37 steals and 14 home runs at that point. He was an awesome outfielder for you, Jacoby Ellsbury. He hasn't been healthy since. I know he's not, like, I know you can't value him as a top 10 outfielder, but he's going like 28th.
His contact skills, to me, show a player who's aging. He chases a lot more. He swings and misses more. And that's kind of what we saw from Josh Hamilton right before his big decline. And the fact that Ellsbury hasn't been a good source of batting average over the years, over the last few years, and has, obviously had the awful second half. I'm not excited about it. Now, I will say I find myself more likely to draft him than I thought I was, just because steals are scarcer than I imagined there were. And you get into that round 7-8 range and you don't have many stolen bases yet. You kind of just have to.
No, just wait and take Billy Burns or Delino DeShields. Like, I'm not sure they'll be worse than
that's him. Not enough on there. Just that one of those guys isn't enough. If you're really messed up in steals when you get that late in the draft, you need to take Ellsbury and anticipate taking a Burns or DeShields later.
All right, but all I'm saying is, like, and I'll wear the Homer jersey here. But
Scott's already wearing it.
You could have so easily have just completely written off Carlos Beltran, right? And he ended up having a pretty good season last year. He really bounced back because he was able to stay healthy. I cannot sit here and say that Jacoby Ellsbury, what is he, 32? He's 32 years old. I cannot sit here and say Jacoby Ellsbury is done or completely in decline. Like, I understand he's not the same player he used to be, but since we always talk about steals are so scarce, he had a horrible season last year and he stole 21 bases. So if he has a good season... Yeah. He's a 30 steal guy.
For the price you're paying for him even now, he needs more than 30.
It's not that expensive. I mean, look, he's going
We're talking about him in the same range as Hunter Pence.
Hunter Pence doesn't steal bases anymore.
I know, but you're saying he's not very expensive. We're in like round 8 now, right?
That's not that expensive, I don't think. I mean, considering Billy Hamilton is going like 10 picks after him.
Well, we all know Billy Hamilton's being drafted too early.
Yeah, Gregory Polanco is going 8 picks after Ellsbury, Adam Eaton. So he's one round ahead of Hamilton, Polanco, and Eaton. And then
I'd rather have Gregory Polanco than Jacoby Ellsbury.
Yeah, I know you really like him. That's fine. Okay, fine. Let's go to that group, because now we're looking at steel specialists coming off the board in to a degree. Well, yeah, sort of, because Revere and Hamilton.
Four in a row, kind of.
Do you consider them this? So it's Polanco, Hamilton, Eaton, and Revere. I don't know what the data would look like in head-to-head points leagues or when they should go in points leagues, but Polanco, Hamilton, Eaton, and Revere, these are all round 9 outfielders.
Guy that I've been trying to look at more closely, because he's one of the guys that when I started looking at the average draft position and the other experts' rankings around the industry, that we were just way out of line on. Like, the lowest person in the industry on Ben Revere is me. The second lowest is Scott.
Where do you have him?
fifth lowest is Al.
Where do you have him?
I've got him at 224 overall.
Yeah, well,
amongst outfielders, I think I have him in the 40s, maybe.
Revere was the 27th best outfielder in points leagues and the 24th best in Roto last year. He played 152 games. He only hit two home runs. He stole 31 bases, scored 84 runs, and batted 306.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm moving Ben Revere up today.
Yeah, I'm just...
We both got him in the 50s.
I'm still comfortable with that. I just really don't want him. I don't like taking on a guy with that many negatives. I mean, he's going to kill you in home runs, kill you in RBI. He's not a great run scorer for a guy who hits leadoff and steals a lot of bases. To me, drafting Revere in a roto league is a concession that you messed up and didn't get enough steals. So you're having to reach for a guy who's...
But he's better than Billy Hamilton everywhere except for steals, right?
Yeah. Well,
yeah. And you've got
everywhere except for steals. Revere's only good at batting average and steals, so he's better than Hamilton at batting average. Everything else is probably a wash.
But Hamilton is possibly 50 stolen bases better than Ben Revere.
Right, exactly. So I would still take Hamilton over Revere, but
wait,
I don't like either.
I see Heath is, as soon as I said that, I saw Heath's body language. He's going to his computer, he's looking up some stats to try to debunk what I just said about Billy Hamilton.
I think you just said Hamilton's possibly 50 steals better than Revere?
100%.
Possibly.
So you think Revere's going to steal like five bases?
I think Revere's going to steal about 30.
He could steal 80 if he keeps his job.
He's never stolen more than 57.
He's played two seasons.
He hasn't gotten on base at a very good rate.
Well, he's not going to. He's one of the worst in the baseball at getting on base. He's one of the worst hitters in the league.
He can still be one of the worst at getting on base and get on base more than he did last year.
Heath, break your calculator out. How many games did Billy Hamilton play last year?
115. 14.
And so if he plays 155, you don't think he can steal 80 bases if he has a slightly better year?
Well, he played 152 the year before and stole 56.
Heath, he got thrown out and got picked off a lot. He was a rookie. Give him some time.
That's kind of important.
No. Look how much better he got in his steal percentage last year. Okay, listen. I know you don't like Billy Hamilton, but you are just – sometimes you are you're such a slave to the statistics that are on paper. Okay, we need to talk this out. As friends, we need to talk this out right now because you are
I'm ready.
You are criticizing Billy Hamilton for his steal percentage when he was a rookie in 2014 and he stole 56 bases. He stole 57 bases in what? In almost 40 fewer games the following year. In 38 fewer games, he stole one more base and got thrown out only 8 times. So if he plays 152 games again, absolutely Billy Hamilton could steal 80 bases. He's the fastest guy. He's the fastest outfield. Well, he's the best base stealer in baseball. There's no question.
He's the fastest. I mean,
he's the fastest. He's the best. You can't continue. You can't play him every day when he gets on base 28% of the time.
And that's why you have convinced me not to draft him. Like, I totally get your points, but you cannot take away from the possibility that Billy Hamilton could steal 80 bases.
I think to say that he has 80 steal potential is like it's very, very unlikely.
I think you're putting 1.5 too many varies in there. I mean, it's unlikely, it's not very, very unlikely. And this is a guy who was a high-end prospect for no other reason than because he has this transcendent speed. He did things on the base path nobody ever seen anybody do when he was in the minors, tagging up on pop flies.
On the base path to do that.
Yeah, I know he does, but 2 years ago, he got on base a lot more than he did last year, right?
He had a 292 on base 2 years ago.
I think that'll be good enough, provided the Reds keep him in the lineup, and they really have no reason not to because they're not winning this year, and he's young, and they need to try and figure out if they're going to get anything out of him. I think I don't like Hamilton either, but I think to just say he can't steal 80 bases, I think that's not giving him enough credit.
It's possible. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying it's not. Like, we don't generally talk about things, I feel like, that would be that big of an outlier.
All right. Gun to your head today. Who leads the majors in steals?
Oh, gun to my head, it's probably Billy Hamilton.
Okay. Okay. By how much? Who's second? D. Gordon?
Yeah, I think I think Ben Revere has a chance to be second.
What do you think is Gordon's upper limit in steals?
60.
And what do you think Hamilton's is?
Right around 60. I don't think they'll probably – I think Hamilton's probably more likely to reach us.
Okay.
But I don't expect anyone to steal more than 60 bases, maybe 65.
Well, but if there was ever a player in modern history who could.
Yeah.
Jerrod Dyson.
Come on.
Now, look, if you want to doubt his stolen base potential because of his on-base ability, that totally makes sense.
Right, and his playing time.
It totally makes sense. I get where you're coming from with Billy Hamilton. I saw your body language. I knew as soon as I said that, I saw you were looking
it
up.
I think it's a little bit silly when basically Ben Revere's been a 35 to 40 steal guy for most of his career, and Billy Hamilton's never stolen 60. To just
Never.
Say
he's played
Hamilton
two
could
years.
Beat him by 50 steals.
He's played 2 years, and he got hurt last year. He played 114 games.
Like, what if you're setting an over-under gun to your head, how many more bases does Billy Hamilton steal than Ben Revere? It's not 50 or 40 or probably even 30.
It might be.
Oh, 30. I would say 30.
So you're projecting just 30 stolen bases?
No. I wouldn't, because I agree with you that he's such a bad hitter that it won't happen, because...
Like, Revere's... You got to set him at 35 at least, right?
Fine, I'll give him 35. You know, it's really a moot point. Let's move on. Let's just move on. Okay. I'd like to get to 50 outfielders.
I am moving Ben Revere up to at least a fourth outfielder.
Adam Eaton, Gregory Polanco, who has more potential, more breakout potential?
Oh, I think it's Polanco. Eaton's already had his breakout. If Eaton does what he did last year, Polanco does what he did last year, Eaton's going to be much better. But I don't really buy into Eaton's breakout as much, I guess. And Polanco is still just 24 years old, so I think there's a good chance we haven't seen all he has to offer.
Okay. All right, next group, Hanley Ramirez. So now we're approaching the end of round 10 here. We got a lot of outfielders coming off the board. Five outfielders coming off the board in the last six picks or so of round 10 in a 12-team league. Hanley Ramirez, Cole Calhoun, who, yeah, you know, I know Al's very high on Cole Calhoun, and I didn't know much about, you know, what he had done in the second half. I had forgotten, but he had a huge power surge.
Mm-hmm.
And we got Corey Dickerson, who I love, Christian Yelich, and David Peralta.
I think Cole Calhoun's another one of those guys where Scott and I might be the two lowest in the industry on him.
All right, let me read the names again. Sorry. Hanley, Calhoun, Corey Dickerson, Yelich, and Peralta.
I certainly don't have Cole Calhoun in that range.
Neither do I. No, he strikes me as highly overrated.
Okay, who's your favorite in this group?
Yep, Heath and Scott are the two lowest on Cole Calhoun.
My favorite in the group. Sorry, can you list them off again?
Yeah, it's Hanley, Cole Calhoun, Corey Dickerson, Christian Yelich, David Peralta.
Okay, Dickerson by far. Yeah. Well, not by far. I only have him a few spots ahead of Hanley, but even with the move from Colorado to Tampa Bay, I feel a lot more confident and Dickerson being a quality fantasy option than Hanley.
Okay. Now, Hanley should get first base eligibility, so that's a bonus for him. But let's go to the next group then. Nobody going off the board in round 11. To round 12, we've got Brett Gardner, Shin-Soo Chu, Curtis Granderson, okay, this is spanning more rounds, but let's just say we're at mid-round picks now, okay? Gardner, Shin-Soo Chu, Curtis Granderson, Randall Grichuk. Gardner, Chu, Granderson, Grichuk.
I've got Grichuk the highest of all those guys.
I think I may have Chu ahead of him, but I don't necessarily like Chu a lot. I just think you can't dismiss what he did last year.
Well, I don't like Chu either.
Okay. Wasn't Chu a top 15 outfielder last year?
He was close. He was
just a monster second half.
18th in points, 20th in roto.
I did look up that Randall Grichuk stat for you. Mm-hmm. Amongst players with 350 plate appearances, he was ninth in ISO in baseball.
There you go. A lot of power. Big-time power guy. My biggest concern with Grichuk is he missed stretches of the second half with an elbow injury last year that kind of gets you thinking Tommy John. I think it has to in these modern times of ours where every other player is having Tommy John. And, if it comes up again this spring or there's concerns about him making throws in center field, which is where he's projected to play, it might cause me to drop him a little. But right now I feel good about Grichuk as cheap source of power.
All right, we'll move down the list. Well, would you rather have Grichuk or Granderson?
Grichuk, Granderson's fine. He's just unexciting. I mean, obviously had a nice bounce back season last year. Still some power, a little bit of speed, but just not much in the way of upside.
All right, after Grichuk, we've got Billy Burns, Juck Peterson, Jay Bruce, Chris Davis with a K, and Kevin Pillar. Billy Burns, Juck Peterson, Jay Bruce, Chris Davis, and Kevin Pillar.
And Peterson is my favorite out of that group. I'm a little bit surprised with why Billy Burns is going so much earlier than Delano DeShields.
I think Billy Burns is presumed to be batting average help, and DeShields is, you know, may or may not be. He wasn't really last year.
Right.
I feel like Burns probably is a little safer in terms of playing time, too.
Let me ask you this. Why would Billy Burns be going so much later than Ben Revere?
I think that's the better question.
That's a fair question. I think that they probably all three should be very close to each other, in my opinion.
Yeah. Okay. Juck Peterson, bounce back this year?
I'm not going to predict that because, I mean, it was just dreadful in the second half. I think it's just as likely he goes to the minors after a month because he's doing so poorly. But I think the range we're talking about now, it's certainly worth the risk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a guy who exit velocity in the first half last year was second to, I don't know if he was actually second in the whole first half, but for a stretch there in the first half, his exit velocity was getting compared to Giancarlo Stanton, how hard he was hitting the ball. And even when he was terrible in the second half, tons and tons of walks, just such a good batting eye that I don't think he needs to hit for a high batting average to capitalize on that power potential and be a fantasy asset.
Okay, so also Chris Davis in there and Kevin Pillar, like, should we be drafting? Are you guys going to draft Kevin Pillar? That was one I never could really buy into last year.
In a five outfielder league, I'd be happy to. Yeah, I mean, he stole 25 bases last year, which not many players did, and I think only six had that many and also hit as many home runs as Pillar did last year. So kind of underrated as a power speed guy. And then I think there's room to improve in the batting average because he made contact at such a high rate, basically AJ Pollock's rate. So I wouldn't be surprised if he became something like a poor man's AJ Pollock this year.
Wow.
Helping in those three categories.
Like really poor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we're going to be drafting Pillar in the first five rounds next year or anything, but I do think he's a little underrated, even by this ranking here.
All right, I'm going to finish the show. I'm just going to read a bunch of outfielders because now when we're at the 50 to 60 range of this position, there are actually, and this is why outfield is cool, you know, there are actually a lot of names that I personally would get excited about. Maybe they're not going to pan out, but I'm happy to draft them and see where it goes. And I'm sure you guys are going to feel the same way, but there's some good players here, okay? After Pillar, we got Mark Trumbo, who, you know, with Arizona last year actually was pretty solid. Had close to a career-high OPS in limited time with Arizona last year.
Scott loves him.
I think he's really underrated. Yeah.
Yeah, Scott didn't love him when he was like an eighth-round pick or whatever, but now he's going 185th overall.
Yeah, I feel like he's the same player he was then, just everybody's drafting him 14 rounds later.
Yeah. Ender Inciarte, who I'm probably going to avoid, just much worse team, much worse lineup. It's going to hurt him. Alex Gordon, Dexter Fowler. I make the case time and time again. Now that ADP is going to go up for Fowler. He's been a free agent, but again, he just played appearances his way to a great fantasy season. Evan Gattis, he's DH only, right?
Yeah.
Jorge Soler, that ADP will go down probably. Okay, Byron Buxton, Josh Harrison, Matt Holliday, Josh Reddick, Michael Conforto, Gerardo Parra, Steven Piscotty, Delino DeShields.
Those two are not top 60 outfielders by ADP.
They're right around there, though. But yes,
that amazes me.
Which two?
Piscotty and DeShields.
Well, the one that amazed me was Michael Conforto, so who I think we all have in our top 40. What the heck's going on there?
Yeah, 59th.
I love Michael Conforto.
Well, there we go.
Nice.
Now that that's out there.
Good for you, Scott.
What do you love about him, Scott?
I just think he's so competent at the plate. He didn't finish as well as he started, so the overall numbers don't look as good, but he made a lot of contact for a guy with his power potential, even with the slower finish. And, you know, obviously he had the two-homer game in the World Series.
Yeah, that was pretty much all he did, though, in the playoffs.
A guy who hits the ball to all fields. I just think he's much more polished than his age and the little time he got in the minors would suggest. I am a little concerned that to get him in the lineup, the Mets have to play Cespedes in center field, and they have Juan Lagares, a great center fielder, on the bench. So it seems like Conforto would sacrifice the most at-bats in that scenario.
Well, he just won't play against lefties, right?
Yeah, he sat against lefties last year.
No, I think Terry Collins has said they want to play him against lefties. I mean, this guy is their long-term number three hitter, so eventually they're going to have to start doing that. But yeah, there's a chance maybe they'll send him some against lefties this year.
So why is Conforto, I'm not challenging you, just asking, why is Conforto better than Stephen Piscotty?
I just think the upside's better. I mean, okay. Their stats were similar last year, I guess, though I think Piscotty had much more BABIP luck.
He did have a lot of BABIP luck, 372 BABIP.
Yeah. And I do rank them similarly. But that's more because I'm worried about Conforto's at-bats than because I think they're close in ability.
Conforto or Gerardo Parra, who you also said you liked?
Parra.
See, now, I've got Conforto, Grichuk, and Piscotty all kind of in the same range. All much higher than this, much closer to Grichuk's ranking than this ranking.
That's where I have them too. I think we ranked. That's why Conforto stood out to be as being low in the list Adam's going off of here, because I think we all have Conforto ranked more like a top 40 outfielder.
Heath, were there any names that stood out to you of guys that you're just doing cartwheels over their draft value?
Oh, I think Piscotty. I think DeShields. One guy kind of stood up the other direction is I don't think I'm probably drafting Matt Holliday this year.
Would you take a gamble on him, though, if he's the 50-something outfielder off the board?
I don't think I have him in my top 60. I'm looking right now. I've got him 63rd.
Okay.
So, no, I would not.
And then let's just finish with Buxton, guys. I do want to get Buxton on some of my teams, especially if I can get him this late. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I almost, at the top of the show, when you were asking me for players whose value I like, I almost listed off him because I just don't think we can really even assess him on what he did in the majors last year. He was a guy who was rushed to the big leagues after injury-plagued minor league career, really didn't get the number of at-bats to make a reasonable progression down there.
Think that makes it more likely that they give him more time there to start the year?
Yeah, I do. And that is the risk of drafting him. But it's so late that who cares with the kind of upside he has. You know, a lot of publications had him still the number one prospect ahead of Chris Bryant last year. And this year, I think everyone still has him top five, even with the disappointment in the majors. So to me, he's a can't-miss prospect. It's just a question of how soon is he going to deliver.
What do you think he does really, like, let's say he's what we think he is. Where's he really going to help you a bunch?
Everything. I see him as an Andrew McCutchen type player.
Okay.
I think the first thing we'll see is the stolen bases.
Like, we're not going to get much power from him this year, probably.
I don't know that I'd say probably. I think there's a chance.
I just, like, I look at it, I know the scouts love him and he's got all the tools. But when I look at his minor league numbers, I don't see unless he develops into a good power hitter, he hasn't really been one of the minors.
Well, it's been sporadic because of all the injuries. Like I've said, the last healthy season he had where he really went from being just an early draft pick to, oh my gosh, this is an unbelievable prospect. He had He slugged 520. He had a total of 49 extra base hits in 125 games.
And that was 2013 when he split between rookie ball and A ball?
Yes. Not rookie ball. Low class A and high class A.
Oh, I thought, okay. Yeah, he had 50 games in rookie ball.
Yeah. Since then, there's been an assortment of injuries. But his stretch right before he got called up last season was awesome.
This is Byron Buxton we are talking about. And Scott, you said the word sporadic. Am I the only one? I cannot hear that word without thinking of Clueless.
I've never seen Clueless, so I can.
What?
I have seen Clueless, and I don't remember the word sporadic.
Oh, sporadically is one of the words that Alicia Silverstone teaches. Silverstone, right? That's her name?
Yeah.
I feel so old. Like, you know how your parents mispronounce people's names? You know, like, that's what I do now. She taught, you know, the girl that she was mentoring, sporadic.
And, sporadic.
Yeah, to make her sound smarter. And then she says to Paul Rudd, I hope it's not sporadically. Anyway, Heath rolling his eyes.
Paul
at me.
Rudd
I saw
was in that.
That
movie.
All right, Heath. I'll give you a reference that you can appreciate. Whatever happened to predictability? The milkman, the paperboy.
Evening TV.
Adam bashed Fuller House yesterday.
Dude, it's the worst.
I don't blame him. Not that I've seen it, but I don't anticipate it being good.
I watched another episode last night during dinner.
Of course you did. A sober episode, huh?
Yeah.
Wow, well, now you're like...
Who says I was sober during dinner?
You were fairly sober, I would think.
Yeah, I actually exercised last night. Did not consume any refreshments.
Yeah, no, Scott, Fuller House is worth seeing. It's so bad that it's worth seeing just to know how bad it is, you know, if that makes sense.
I'm going to watch the entire season.
Good. Good for you. I'm not.
Well, did you think it was good, what you've seen?
I think... If you grew up with Full House, there's enough enjoyable moments.
No, there are not. No.
Even as a kid, I recognized Full House wasn't very good.
Exactly.
I watched it because it was something I was able to watch.
Yeah, you're wrong about that.
aren't you too old for Full House, Heath?
What do you mean? How old do you think I am?
Well, Scott and
I was watching Girl Meets World for a while, so I can't really. But see, Boy Meets World was actually a good show. So...
Wait, how old are you? 36 is my guess.
That's exactly right.
I feel like you're too old for Full House.
What do you mean?
I feel like
Full House ran in the 90s, right?
Yeah, I think it started in the 80s, right? Like 89?
So when I was 10, I was too old to watch it then?
I guess
not.
Yeah,
I think you're wrong on this one, Adam.
What age should people watch Full House?
Like 8 to 12, maybe.
8 to 12. It started in 87.
Oh, it started in 87. Yeah. Okay.
And ended in 95 when I was 14.
So you were a very immature 14-year-old.
Did you watch it right up to the end? I don't think you were DVRing it, were you?
I do not remember the finale.
That works.
And I don't think we had DVR in 95.
Yeah, that was kind of the joke.
Me either. But yeah, back then, Alicia Silverstone was starring in a bunch of Aerosmith videos. I do know that.
That was towards the end, yes. And Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead?
No, she was not in that. That's Christina
Applegate.
What
babysitter movie was she in?
Christina Applegate was in that. She's in the movie called The Babysitter, I think.
Oh, okay.
Where, like, I think that's a pretty inappropriate movie.
I can't imagine that.
But Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. Now, that is a classic, and that is the end of today's Outfield Preview. So thank you for listening. No, we did not get to everybody, but yes, we have another month before the season starts. So don't worry. There will be plenty more coverage for you. And boy, if you think starting outfielder has a lot of names, just wait till starting pitcher, which we'll tackle tomorrow.
Oh, deep sleeper, just to throw the name out there.
Yeah.
Aaron Altherr. Altherr.
Love it. We talked about that on a Sleepers podcast last month, so... He was already on my radar, Scott, thanks to you.
Okay. Not everybody listens to every episode.
No, it's certainly not.
What do you think the Rotten Tomatoes score for Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead is?
I'm going to guess in the 33.
Okay. You nailed it.
Are you serious?
That's exactly what it is.
Oh, that is awesome. That's a really good guess. Unless you're lying to me. I really got that right?
Yeah, you got it.
Oh, my goodness. Rejoice. All right, that's it. See you later.